Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, welcome back. This is the Rehobus Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcast. Check them out. They appreciate it. Good morning. It is, what is it? November the 1st, the day after.
11-1, here we are.
The big November.
Excellent.
You know, it's fun this time of year because, you know, summer's ending, but it's so busy right now. There's so many things that kind of go on up until almost January 1st, that before you know it, it's spring again.
That's not a bad thing, though. I like it this time of year. It's nice and cool and dry, and it seems like the crowds are less, and, you know, there's certainly, you know, organized activities you can do if you'd like, and if you want to just sort of take a quiet stroll on the beach, that's really pleasurable, too.
Well, and I think traditionally people are like, boo, winter, yay, summer, and I think when I moved here, I was like, boo, winter, yay, summer. But over time, I'm like, boo, summer, yay, winter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you're fully, you know, adopted into the sort of localism of the area, you get that kind of like, that little breath of fresh air once the quote-unquote season is ended.
Well, so John Eatman Jr. back on the podcast. I had such a great time chatting with you. And I don't even remember what we even talked about. I just remember, I was at a party last night. I was talking to a friend of mine, Ron, and I go, yeah, I'm having this guy, John Eatman Jr. You'd like him. We'd have been friends back in the day. Yeah. I mean, I felt like, you know, we could have grown up together. So
yeah,
I reached out and asked if you'd come back on, and you said absolutely. So thank you.
No, thank you.
So back to that kind of that point, though, it's, you know, I think for like summer, you know, we like the beach and the heat, but man, sometimes the heat and the beach and the people, like even this year, I struggled a bit this year with the people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously strange time of year. People are sort of adapting to sort of, you know, what came before.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out like, oh, what is comfortable.
Right.
And finding that space. So, but there's a lot of, you know, living here, there's a lot of opportunities. I think people are flexible enough and at least businesses tried to be flexible enough to adapt to some of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And really, to my point was is that I've just become a huge fan of the fall.
Yeah.
And the winter. I really like the winter. Maybe March. March is tricky, right?
It's tough because it's dry and it's a lot of times it's wet. You get that March, April, you know, kind of wet.
April showers bring May flowers.
Yeah, wet and kind of raw. It's no good for my old knees.
Well, and you just, it's like, it's kind of like August or September or even, I mean, it's finally cooling off, but, you know, August, you're like, okay, all right, let's wrap up this summer. Let's bring it down a bit. I felt like my air conditioner went on in May and it went off and then the heater came on.
Yeah, yeah, but that's okay. I mean, I like I said, I love these days more than, you know, the heat of the summer.
Well, and we were talking a little bit before, you know, it does seem like this time of the year is very crisp, very clear, a lot of great color, a lot of great texture, dimension. I mean, there's something that cools, and you're a photographer, so just bullshit about some photography stuff, because I'm a big fan of photography. What I'm a big fan of is things to take pictures of.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think is awesome.
Yeah.
You know? So if you can do it and you can capture it and you do a great job at it. But right now we got a lot of great textures. And one of my favorite things is as winter ends and spring starts and because we do have a lot of open expansive areas with tree line borders. So, you know, middle of summer, you're looking at a dense wall of trees. But as we come out of winter and spring starts and the little leaves start to kick in and that texture changes and you get a little bit of leaf, but you also get into like the canopy or into the depth of the forest, which is great. And then once summer comes, then that shot's gone. And then as we go into fall now, obviously leaf peeping season, but, you know, we get a lot of great textures and colors. But as the leaves start to fall back off, we get to start to kind of look back into the trees and stuff. So
it is interesting, particularly if you go to a lot of the same places, you know, sort of day in and day out. I mean, and everybody does, I mean, in their own environment, but it's fun to watch how it changes and how it, you know, just like I said, just metamorphosis from from something that's very full to something that's maybe even more colorful and vibrant into, you know, something that's nothing.
Well, and you love that old phrase, you know, to see the trees through the forest or the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is that obvious stuff to see, but sometimes, you know, through the seasons changing, you do start to see new textures that, I don't know, maybe we weren't in trained to look for.
Well, the light changes too. I mean, the light gets lower in the sky as you go to fall and into winter, and so that creates longer shadows typically, and you know, the timing of it, you know, in a different part of the day will be lit differently too, and if you're paying attention, you can start noticing all that stuff.
Well, we ran this morning. I was telling you that I got sick. I got a cold last week, and I haven't had a cold. So I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know, what is this?
Yeah, it happens.
What's going on? Got a COVID test. You know, it was clear. Everything was fine. But, you know, I had a cold. And so we skipped running last week. But this week I said, you know, let's try and see what we can do. So we ran this morning. And this is that before daylight savings time.
Yeah, we're right on it,
I think. Is it daylight savings time?
I think this weekend is coming up.
Maybe it is this weekend. But, you know, we're right before it. So we ran at 6 and it was pitch black.
Yeah.
But like we were talking, it was so clear. The stars this morning were out, and oh my God, it was beautiful. And the moon. And
how much do you run typically, like on a session?
In a day?
Yeah.
So we did 4 miles today.
4 miles.
Usually we try to do 5.
Yeah.
That's great. 4 or 5.
That's great.
Yeah, but I was not feeling it this morning. I walked some.
Well, it's like going to the gym though. Like it's, you know, getting there and going through the whole process, the first 10 minutes sucks. And then, like, after that, you know, sort of the endorphins start to kick in a little bit and you sort of muddle through it and it starts to feel better. And then at the end of it, you're usually happily surprised that you did it.
Well, when I was younger, I could do the gym and running. And then I would just do running and no gym, or I would do the gym and no running. But to do it all together, I have to be younger for sure.
Oh, it's exhausting.
Yeah, and then I'm like, well, what's the point? You know, I got a great family. Everything's fantastic. I'm, just for the most part, pretty healthy.
Yeah, that's great.
I say I'm not fat. I was just supposed to be taller. If you stretched me out a little bit, I'd be just fine.
It's posture.
I saw this thing you can buy that if you lean over, it sets off a noise.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
I've seen that. It's like almost like a man's ear type
posture collar.
Yeah, something. I don't know.
Can you imagine like an electrical posture collar? Oh God!
Yeah, it's Pavlov's dog all over again.
Yeah. Well, it's not easy getting old, but
no, but it's fun.
So are you? You know, I went and checked out your Instagram. I follow you, and you're getting into, or it looks like you're really making a push on portraits.
Yeah, portraits are fun. You know, I do a lot of sort of professional headshots and, you know, lighting people and getting people in front of the lights that in a way that's, you know, pleasing and, you know, sort of magnifies their, you know, their face rather than making it a distraction.
Yeah.
A lot of times people, if you look at people's headshots, you start noticing that the way they're turned, their body positioning, the way their face is turned, whether their chin is up or down, and all of these things, and where the shadows fall on the face, it makes a big difference. And then secondly, like the expression, like, you know, what is the expression saying and telling the viewer? Mm-hmm. So all those things, you know, from headshots translate to portrait photography as well. So taking those sort of tenets and then bringing that to portraits as well, you know, with respect to lighting and shadows and making things dramatic or, you know, whatever the message would be. I'm really interested in that because, you know, everybody looks different, but everybody's interesting to me.
Well, we're in this thing now where everybody wants to be perfect. You know, I think it's on Instagram. You can do a filter that supposedly makes your face perfect. And I think that people are losing, you know, the cool character of people.
Agreed.
You know, if not only do you set this kind of tone when you are reaching perfection, right? Immediately everybody's like, oh, brother, you know.
Well, everybody's seen it now and everybody can recognize, well, that's just some like crazy, like super soft filter thing that one's skin looks like that.
Yeah, makes your eyes look like you're have deer eyes.
Yeah.
Big doe eyes.
Dog, yeah. Yeah. Dog ears and all this stuff.
But I think people are, the cool characteristics of a person's face, the wrinkles, the natural wrinkles, the tones, the dents, the bumps, the lumps. I mean, that's the cool.
It's the character.
Yeah. I always bring up this, the photographer, is it Leibowitz?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Annie Leibowitz.
How do you say her last name?
Leibowitz.
Leibowitz. Mm-hmm. But she could, she takes like that picture she did of Keith Richards.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost like she added wrinkles.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But all that's done, like, really, I mean, obviously the subject's there, but it's done through careful consideration of lighting. And that can't be, like, overstated. Like, great light will help make things even more amazing than what they already are.
Absolutely. I forget if it was her or somebody else, but there was somebody that was doing a lot of portraits of, like, old cowboys. You know, these people from, 80, 90 years ago, just weathered humans.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's, to me, is so interesting. We're not going to stop, where we're headed, because we're the minority, not the majority, but, big boobs, skinny, these beautiful people, and they're making a point, that's what's becoming interesting. That's what they're trying to show is their uniqueness, whether it's, a bikini or whatever. But it's like, it's not that interesting anymore,
No, and it's almost like, to me, it becomes just like this fight for relevance, like in society and how people, either have been sort of conditioned and cultured to look at themselves and what is important. Like you said, like, what's the perfect face? Well, the perfect face is what? Completely symmetrical, like no lines, these sort of things, which is unrealistic at a minimum. It's not a real thing. So the more people sort of push into those things, the more sort of diluted the whole thing gets. And, when I do headshot photography, it's about creating an image, a photograph of you looking really just the best you can look on your best day.
It's very honest.
I don't want you looking like something out of a Vogue magazine. I mean, we can do that if that's what you want, but we want it to be natural. People want to look at the image and go, yeah, that's the guy that I'm talking to. That's who I'm meeting with today. I saw him on LinkedIn. We got a meeting. That's what we're doing. And that's the guy who shows up. I mean, I see so many people with headshots, realtors are notorious for this, that they have a headshot that they like that was 10 years ago and they still use
Skip Faust.
Well,
no disrespect, Skip.
Don't pick on Skip. Skip, we can talk if you want to.
Yeah. Well, he's a guy.
Absolutely.
He had the sign there on Savannah Road for, 20 years.
Yeah.
It was fading out and finally.
Yeah, but there's something to be said that that image, and while it probably still looks like him, it's not a good representation of who he is today. And he's certainly grown as a realtor, as a professional. Absolutely. So why wouldn't we sort of, commend that messaging and bring that with it?
Well, and I think he did update it.
Yeah, he may have.
Yeah,
but just the billboard. No.
Yeah, it was just a good example. No hate, Skip. We love you. Great smile, buddy.
Absolutely.
But there's something about. It's like, it's a lot like life, man. If you don't live an honest life, it's hard to participate in life, right? And if you're not putting out an honest character of yourself, like if you have to put a lot of filters or you have to do all this stuff to get to a point where you're willing to have your face out there, then you have to keep up with that. It's like the gym. I mean, I like going to the gym. I definitely liked it more when I was younger, but at 53, I haven't been. I'll do some push-ups maybe, but I'm just looking for the me that I can maintain on a daily basis without, like, if I don't get to the gym, everything falls apart. Like, I don't want that.
Yeah. There's certain level of maintenance. It just goes along with getting old. And I forget who said it, but, after, it's like age 40 or something, like, your body starts to lose a muscle. Like, definitively, like as you get there. And unless you work to sort of build strength and conditioning in your body, like you will just start to deteriorate because of atrophy.
Yeah. Well, your body will, your big muscles will eat your body.
Yeah, essentially.
It's like,
and things, you know, the support system, you know, for your joints and everything start to go away.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, so you have to do stuff. You just have to, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, vacuuming the house a lot or going to the gym or whatever.
Well, I think that, I mean, I had Chris Antonio on the podcast. He's a very great fitness guy, great nutrition guy, and he, you know, he told me some stuff. Somebody else had told me that, you know, like, if you want to lose that last 10 or something pounds, you're going to have to eat it off. I was like, what? And what happens to me is I get a little crazy about my diet and stop eating because I'm like, and, you know, it's funny. You know, I can wake up, feel kind of crappy, but by lunch, I'm okay.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the day, I'm fine.
Uh-huh.
Right? So there just maybe something that happens overnight. Gotta get the wheels back in motion. But, you know, to make big decisions in the morning is not smart.
Right.
You know, if I'm going to make decisions about like gym and running and, you know, life changes, I'm going to do it in the afternoon when I feel a little better about myself. Because in the morning, I'm usually like, ugh.
Up. But it's interesting, though. But you get up at the crack of dawn and you go running and stuff. So that to me sends, you know, a message. You're on the grind. You're out there pushing yourself and your boundaries a little bit, too.
Which is good. You know, honestly, I mean, I do it for my heart rate, for my health. But I do it really for my mental.
Yeah.
It's mental.
Yeah, it's peaceful, and it's just outside. I mean, I was thinking about that today. I stopped and got a coffee on the way over, and, you know.
Where'd you get coffee?
Just at the Starbucks over there.
Dude, you got to try the Exxon coffee.
What is it?
Exxon.
Exxon, really?
Where do you live?
Over in Millsboro.
Millsboro, okay. Yeah. So this is, you know,
up here, right?
By the car. The
post office on the corner there. Is that where it is?
No, that's, I think that's...
Oh, no, I know where it is.
It's down where farther.
It's
where the dealership is.
Yeah, on the
They
on the
rebuilt
edge.
It.
Yeah, I saw they were working on it.
Dude, they have the Frankie machines.
Yeah.
Frankie. It's delicious.
Really?
Oh, my God.
In the Exxons?
Yeah. I know. So, I think it's the country store. It has, like, a name. It's not...
Yeah.
You know, it's the country grub or whatever inside the Exxon.
Yeah, but right.
They have these Frankie machines. My wife and I went in there and you know, it's kind of like Rofa.
Yeah.
You know, where they kind of grind the beans.
Yeah, and it's right there.
Yeah.
It's all super fresh.
Yeah, but this machine, I'm like, as it goes down and starts, comes out like espresso. I'm like, tell my wife, Google this machine and find out how much it is.
That's probably $10,000.
$15,000.
15, really?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
I was like, oh, well, we'll go back to drip. But it is so delicious.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't even know that was in there, so that's a good little...
And they got great food. Very, very cool little...
That's crazy. We got some great food around here. I mean, there's no lie about that. And did you go to the new... well, I guess it's today. It's the Taco
Rio.
Yeah.
No,
do you like that?
I have never had it.
Really?
I've never had it.
Do you like Mexican food?
I love Mexican food.
Oh, man. Well,
I don't know if that's considered Mexican food. I think it's Southern California.
I
guess Baja is Mexico, but...
Yeah, I can see that. But it's good. I like... it's very fresh. Everything's made to order, and it's always... I mean, it's always been great.
I'm in a place, unfortunately, where with three kids, I like... it's, and I hate to say this, but I really have to watch out how I spend money.
Yeah, well...
We will go try his place because I know Ashley Hubert. She does a lot of stuff with them. She was at the soft opening. I am a little annoyed that I didn't get invited to a soft opening, but I've never been, so I guess that might help. But I do.
Well, if it's any constellation, I eat there a lot, and I didn't get invited either.
Dude, what the hell? I do like, you know, what I do like is that, you know, the guy's like, hey, I mean, he turned half the wall into a Marshall amp. I mean, that's
I can't wait to see the inside. I mean, I've seen a couple pictures and stuff. It looks pretty awesome.
I pray that it's reasonably priced and that I can afford to go there.
Well, I mean, that's the hope. You never know what it's going to be.
We're in a weird spot right now, and you know, things are going up.
Yeah, inflation's pretty rampant.
It's tough. So, you know, but I'll definitely go over there and try it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth a stop. They have a drive-through and everything too.
To take my family, a family of five, You know, it could really, it could be, it could be a $100 night.
Oh yeah, it's easy. And that said, like, a lot of places are getting like that too. It's just be, you know.
Yeah, well, you support what you can do and do help out and.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're going there every day, but I like to support the local businesses and, you know, the family-owned businesses and those sort of things. I think it's important that we do that stuff more.
Absolutely, damn, hell yeah, of course. So you have eaten, so when you had the taco truck.
Yeah, I used to go to the taco truck and just pop in there. And it's great, like, you know, in between, you know, whatever, and just pull in and, you know, the buffalo shrimp taco. And if you like, you know, like seafood, that's really amazing.
I have to try that.
I'm a savory guy. I'm not really like sweet. So like, I mean, my wife would tell you, I do love cheesecake, but.
And I actually like ice cream and cookies, but I'm not very into sweets.
That's a true story.
Dude, I love cheesecake. I'm not even sure you would consider, like, if you're having a sweet tooth moment, I'm not even sure cheesecake would be.
It's really savory.
Yeah,
too.
It's not.
I don't crave sweets. I mean, salt for sure.
Yeah, you'll definitely be, unless you maybe cover it with like a caramel sauce or strawberry sauce or something that had some more sugar. But I wouldn't find.
Yeah, and I usually like omit that if I had to order it and it was included.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like a red velvet cake.
Oh, red velvet cake. That's
sweet.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
That is a go-to when you have.
Do you like carrot cake?
Sure.
I don't like carrot cake.
No?
No, I don't know.
What's your problem, man?
I don't know. I mean,
what's your problem, John?
I like carrots, but I don't care for. Well, see,
I don't
like
the vegetables?
I like vegetables. I mean, broccoli. I eat a lot of spinach when I can, and so that's good.
No, I mean in your cake.
Not in my cake, though.
Well, my son, David, loves carrot cake, and I got him. Can I say I got him? I got him some cake. But it was like a real carrot cake. And so he's going into it and he's like, what are these orange things? They go, carrots.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay. I mean, as a kid, you're kind of like,
his brain
what is
like
that
twisted wood.
What is that?
Carrot?
Awesome.
So, yeah. No, but if I'm going to do like some sweets, and I struggle, you know, I'm sober, but. Freaking cookies are just like a drink.
Well, that's a good point because my wife makes these homemade chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, for God's sake!
And one of my sons so really loves. I mean, he clamors for them, but I won't eat them like the next day because it's. But when they come out of the oven, like and they're warm and they're just soft, like I can go like for 10.
10. Oh, my God.
I can go for like 10, and I don't even drink milk, and I'll even have a glass of milk.
So if she makes 20, then that covers you and
she'll make a whole lot of them just because I am in the mix. But
now, would you dunk a cookie in milk, or are you too old for milk?
I don't drink milk ever. I'll have like maybe 3 glasses a year.
Do they?
Not because
go
I just
cookies?
Thought, well, but in that sense, in that frame, I will have a glass of milk.
What happens
and
three every, times?
And
a
the
year?
Family goes, look, he's having a glass of milk. It's like a big thing.
Yeah, what happens every 3 times a year that brings out the milk and John?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just it has to go.
It's a big
like
family
peanut
event?
Butter and jelly.
They glass of milk, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go ahead.
Yeah, I'll pour.
Well, I love milk. It is dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, all my kids drink it all. My wife drinks it. They like chocolate milk, the whole thing. I drink a ton of coffee and I drink water. That's probably it.
Well, when I say I drink a ton of milk, I drink usually like milk at night. Yeah. You know, like when the demons show up and all of a sudden, you know, the ability to say no goes away. And I, like if I get a bag of Ginger Snap cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. Ginger Snap and milk.
It's on.
I'm looking at it, it says, 4 cookies, 120 calories. I'm like, 4 times 10 is 40. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah, but what about you talk about the diet thing. Like, I mean, I got into doing some, like, intermittent fasting, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I found that to be interesting. And it kind of happens for a lot of people just by default. They don't eat late, and then they don't have breakfast. So by lunch, they're hungry, and it seems to work. But I found it, you know, for me, if I can consciously quit eating, you know, around 6 for the night, and then, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock the next day rolls around, like I've done it. And, you know, and I feel like, you know, it's given my system a chance to rest a little bit.
Yeah, like everything, I got into intermittent fasting, and of course I had to take it to the extreme, right? I mean, I ate, like, I had a two-hour window.
Yeah.
Like, I fasted for 22 hours, and then I stuffed my guts for 2 hours. Like, 11 hours is good, 20 must be better.
Yeah, we can do it. Let's go for it.
My body was, and I started to gain weight. And I think my body was like, bro, you're starving.
Yeah, so that happens too.
Whatever you eat, I'm just putting it on you. We're going to store it. Something's crazy.
Yeah.
The problem with intermittent fasting, all these crazy diets, is I think it takes a while before you really set in until your body starts to make the changes to the changes that you're making.
Right.
It's not like, oh, I'm an intermittent fasting, and all of a sudden today I'm start seeing the results.
Yeah.
It takes a minute.
Yeah, it does. And it's just like exercise, too. Like, you don't see the results overnight. I mean, you might feel the pain, you know, overnight. And you might lose some water or whatever, you know, the first week or whatever. And like, it's working. But you're right. It takes some discipline to just like anything, to make it work. And
well, and when I did that, my body finally got into this place where my results was it slowed down my metabolism.
Yeah.
I wasn't burning as much food, and it was storing.
Yeah.
My body was storing food. So I started I was eating less, putting on weight.
Yeah.
So, and Chris Antonio was great because his whole philosophy is, you know, eat.
And yeah, energy.
Yeah. And if someone has, if you know, if you ever talk to somebody about Chris Antonio's diet, they're like, oh, you're going to have to eat a lot of food.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his idea is get that metabolism going. So it's finding a balance for me.
Yeah.
But I had to start eating breakfast. I came out of that and I just didn't feel great. And I had to get back to, I started eating breakfast and just eating food. And I actually started to lose weight.
I look at it as it's a tool, you know, just like anything else, like, you know, intermittent fasting, or, you know, maybe you go keto for a while, or maybe you're carbo loading because you're going to be in a race or something like that. I mean, all of those things work in sort of parentheses of performance. If you're tied to one of them, just like anything, it sort of loses its efficacy because your body adapts to it. So when you're changing, you know, you're keeping your body guessing, you're keeping it growing, and you know, mentally, I think it's a different experience.
Well, and I think that for me, I'll speak for myself. You know, if our bodies were cars, you know, I feel like I want to have a Corvette body. But there's a reason I don't have a Corvette. You know, it's just not practical for my life.
Yeah.
And to maintain a Corvette body is just not practical. I have a Grand Cherokee body.
Yeah, we're going off-road, baby.
That's right. You know, I don't want to, and you know, if I'm too in shape, I'm a distraction. I'm annoying. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, if I feel like I'm, you know, like a Cherokee body, then I'm okay. I feel like, you know, I'm... Yeah. Just a little bit from somewhere.
Yeah, you can still get around. You can go to some different places. It may not be as fast, but hey, you know, you can cruise around and bring some people with you.
Well, and the other thing happens to me is I'll eat something bad and I won't feel good for about, you know, from it. And then I'll make life-changing decisions because of that one moment.
Yeah.
When actually it was just something I ate. I shouldn't have made, you know, maybe 40 gram ginger snaps. Maybe it was not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't feel well. I'm not joining the gym now. You know, I just have to kind of let these things pass and choose to not eat 40
That's interesting.
Ginger snaps.
How long have you been sober?
I'll celebrate 13 years in December.
Well, congratulations. That's
Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah. And I would probably say that it's been a process of sort of awakening, you know, sensory for you,
well,
and understanding kind of where the edges are again and the boundaries.
Yeah, well, I actually got sober in March 31st, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sober almost 5 years and drank.
Mm-hmm.
And just had this voice that said, look how good you've done.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really prepared for that day.
Yeah.
And I made the right turn in the liquor store, and I was hiding bottles by the end of the week.
Yeah.
So at that point, I'm like, okay. Sobriety was a gift. It just doesn't stick around. You know, you got to work hard.
Sure.
But I also found that when I picked up a drink, I just couldn't stop again. So I had to struggle a bit. And finally, you know, I'll have 13 years free from pain pills.
Yeah.
My last thing it's been 15 years since I had a drink.
Yeah.
But 2 years into my sobriety, I was taking pain pills for my back.
Mm-hmm.
It said take one. I thought it said take four. I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a crazy road to go down, I would think.
Yeah. But I mean, it's what I, you know, it's.
Yeah, but you learn and you grow, and thankfully you're here today, and you're healthy, and you have a great family, and you know things are going the right direction.
Yeah. I actually just got an injection in my back. Dr. Sutherland did it. I don't know if you know Dr. Sutherland.
No.
Big help. Yeah. Made my back feel a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very happy about that.
That's good.
But, you know, sobriety, you know, it's like the problem is donuts don't get you put in jail, right? So it's easy to, you know, struggle or pay attention or work hard at trying to get off of alcohol or drugs. But, you know, food is just another addiction.
But I was going to say, it's like it's essentially the same thing. It's like you said, it may not put you in jail, but like in the jail of the mind, you know, using the different substances of sugar and, you know, all of those things that you know, attack the brain in a lot of similar ways. You know?
Well, and it can be almost worse than alcohol or drugs because there really isn't anything stopping you.
No, there never is. It's what you decide at the end of the day.
Well, and a lot of the times, you know, even when I got sober, I felt like, you know, it says we admit we are powerless over self. I won't use the word alcohol, but it's, you know, it's a first step of many versions of a 12-step program. But mm-hmm. It said for, you know, we admitted we were powerless over, in this case, it was alcohol. We admitted we were powerless over food. But really, it's a self, right? Because it's self that makes a choice. You know, you have that fork in the road.
Yeah.
You either don't eat the donut, or you eat the donut.
Right, the decision point.
Yeah, and self's like, I'd rather eat the donut. Where humility's like, nah, listen, you shouldn't eat the donut.
Yeah, like, and how much of, you know, the ego plays into the role, all the pressures of this and that. You're weighing all those things, and it's over a donut.
It's like, over a donut. But, you know, you do it, you know, but, you know, unfortunately for alcohol or drugs is that a lot of the times you can either, you know, wreck a car. You know, this is a tough time. The seasons are the, you know, Halloween and Christmas and Thanksgiving were used to be big drinking days. And you know, a lot of people will cross the line sometimes around this time of the year. And so, you know,
the temptation, you know, and it's there. It's just, you know.
Well, Christmas parties used to be a great opportunity to fucking wreck your life.
Yeah, I think they still are for a lot of people.
Well, I think they've toned them down.
Yeah, yeah, the lampshades are still come out, but
yeah, but it's, you know, but you know, usually with an alcohol or drug, you do something that allows, you know,
well, you give yourself permission,
yeah,
because everybody else is doing it, and it's you know, more times than not, it's not the right decision, you know, for anybody.
No, and. But usually people are like, well, and I was going to say, you know, that we admitted we were powerless over self, that our lives have become unmanageable. But a lot of the times it's we admitted we were powerless over self, that our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. And that was my story. You know, my parents had had it. My employer had had it. My friends had had it. They'd all had enough of me.
It's hard to watch people self-destruct.
Yeah.
And you know, you can say things to people or whatever, but, you know, after a while you look at it and they're like, well, you've said your piece. Like, they have to just do what they have to do. And if it creates distance, then so be it.
Well, and unfortunately, people like that, whether it's a drug or food or money or whatever it is, you know, they usually have an audience that surrounds them that puts up with it.
Yeah, it enables it to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes excuses, you know, and then in the end, you know, one or two left that are hanging on.
Yeah.
And then finally, they're all done.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh.
And then that's and then really, like, that's what is most probably fearful to a lot of people too, is that, all right, well, now it's just me. What do I do now? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no more audience, there's no more things. How do I rationalize that? Like, now what do I do? Because,
well, it's usually a rehab.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I'm finally pressed into this corner and you can't get out, and you're like, okay, I'll go to rehab. And then they're there for a week, they're like, let me out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is, let me out.
This is not what I thought.
The heat is off. Let me out.
Yeah. And then it's a reflexive thing. And then they go back and they try the same patterns again and it still doesn't work. And, you know, at some point the day of reckoning comes and you decide, well, yeah, like, I'm not going to do that anymore. It's not really healthy. And so we will we'll make some, you know, some deeper decisions.
Well, ego devastation is humiliation. And I feel like it takes something like that, you know, and this is no offense to people that are overweight or struggling with food, but someone asked me, you know, how do you tell a person that's has an eating problem that they have an eating problem, you know, because of course you're going to hurt their feelings. It's too hard to say.
Sure.
And I said, unfortunately, that kind of situation is like you have to like cut one of the legs halfway through and let them sit on a chair and have a collapse in front of everybody. And then they're completely humiliated, completely embarrassed. And then they're like, I need to make some changes. You know, it's not like, hey, man, you or woman or whatever, you need to address your eating. Eh, they don't care. I don't care. It's when we wreck a car, you know, have inappropriate behavior with somebody at work at the Christmas party, you know, or eat too much, break a chair when you sit down because of your weight. You know, it's that moment where you're like, ugh.
Then it's pain.
It's pain.
It's pain. It's either the pleasure of the pain outweighs the pleasure of doing the activity. Yep. And at that point, it becomes, a new frame of reference. Well, I don't like how that feels. That was awful.
It's tough. And I've struggled at points in my life with weight. There was even before I got sober, I had moved to Delaware from San Diego. Was definitely into a whole different game out in San Diego. Yeah. A lot of more uppity kind of stuff going on down there.
Sure.
In Southern California. And to come here, there was none of that. And I was definitely in that kind of stuff. So yeah. I just kind of transferred everything into alcohol because mm-hmm. it was legal. And I was working this graveyard shift and drinking in the morning, eating wings, smoking cigars. I mean, it was just this disgusting, gluttonous.
No filter.
Yeah, it was disgusting. And luckily, I'd like to say I got sober because I drank too much, but I got sober because I got punched in the mouth and I was just gross.
Yeah.
I had to make some changes in my life.
Yeah. And literally you had pain and, and you came through and you're like, well, this sucks.
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Want this.
It's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're well.
Yeah. And listen, if anybody out there is listening to this and is annoyed by what we've said, we're sorry. But listen, if there is anybody out there struggling with anything like that and needs someone to chat, reach out. I definitely know people in all the departments, you know, but if it's alcohol, you know, I'm always available if anybody needs to talk. But I don't want to turn this into a sobriety podcast.
No, it's awesome. But I mean, you know, we kind of come full circle about like being truthful and being honest, you know, and leaning that back to photography and how, you know, I approach imagery and you know, that usually the honest answer is the correct one. Because there's really nothing else. I mean, it's the truth. You know, if somebody has wrinkles, cool. Somebody has a little extra skin underneath, you know, their chin and their neck. That's cool too, because everybody has that at some point, you know.
Right.
And to sort of like hide that and mask that, we can sort of navigate around that and not highlight it. But we can also, you know, magnify the things that do look great. I mean, you got great blue eyes. I mean, obviously that's a big feature for you.
Well, thank you, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate that.
But you got great hair and all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm sitting here looking at you, you're pretty symmetrical. So you'd be fun to take a picture of. We could do some cool dramatic stuff, and I hope we get the opportunity to do that soon.
No, I'm going to do it. I want to do it. My buddy Matt, who's gone, did you ever see, he did before he died, he did this magazine cover. I forget what it was for, but it was this, you know, this dark light picture, you know, so one side of his face was in the dark.
Yeah.
It was like a shadow and the other side was lit up,
yeah.
You know, and it was like, you know, I think the story was about his past and, you know, the shady side.
The duality of things. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was very cool. And I've always thought, and I love black and white.
Oh yeah.
Or sepia or whatever it is. What is the difference? Black and white, sepia is a little more.
It's like a brownish tinge. Yeah.
Yeah. Muted brownie.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes from like back in film when they used to develop stuff, and it was a treatment of you know, instead of just the regular developing and fixing, it was a whole nother layer of process.
Yeah, well, I love it, and I do know that there, you know, you can only get so many great shots with an iPhone, right? You're just not getting great.
We have them all, don't we? We have a ton on our phones, but yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm the new iPhone. You can actually take, like this morning I ran, and actually I took a picture of the stars, of the Little Dipper.
Really?
Yep. You can do that with the iPhone now.
That's crazy. I mean, that's really amazing. If you think about it, just walking around with that type of technology and, you know, in your hand.
Well, you could take pictures of the stars, but the moon looked like a circle.
Yeah, the moon's really bright. People generally think, well, it's up there, so we can probably get all the detail, but you really have to...
Well, the moon's very crescenty right now.
Yeah.
And you can't really capture the crescent.
Yeah.
You can only capture a white dot, but grabbed a bunch of stars.
That's awesome.
So how do people, like, if they want to get their portrait done, I mean, how many have you done? How'd you get started? How long have you been focusing? Because I don't recall if you were doing as much portrait stuff the last time you were here.
Yeah, so we did a lot of stuff over the years. I think we talked about it last time a little bit in the golf course arena. You know, I did a lot of landscape and that stuff. Still, you know, did some things for country clubs. I still work in that realm, but got into portraiture and headshots about 4.5-5 years ago now. And, you know, worked on the craft, learned the lighting, you know, worked on direction, all of those things. And, you know, what really goes into making, you know, a good headshot. And it's like some of the things we talked about before. And those things translate over to portraiture. And, you know, in some sense, a headshot is a portrait, but a portrait isn't a headshot.
I meant to say that again.
So a headshot.
Right.
Is a portrait, but a portrait is not necessarily a headshot.
Yeah, because I agree, because you know, you said, hey, look, I'd like to do your portrait. I'd like to do your headshot. And I was thinking, what would I use this for? Because it's not like, you know, I'm not dressing up. If I'm doing a headshot, I don't want it to be like for a job.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want it to be, I'm not trying to be an actor or anything, so I don't need a headshot.
Yeah.
So if I was going to do it, I would really, like you said, maybe grab a few different shirts. I want it in black shirt.
Yeah.
A black t-shirt, and I'm looking for all
because that's like
the rough parts of my life to show on my face.
That's your brand, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's your deal. So that makes a whole lot of sense. And when we do a headshot session or a portrait session, I counsel people to bring lots of different outfits and tops and all sorts of sweaters and textures and stuff. So before we even start, we go through the outfits and we choose, you know, what's your favorite stuff? What do you like best? What do you feel best in? And then we decide, well, is this for LinkedIn? Are you a business person? Do you need this for a billboard?
Okay.
You know, all of those sort of cues and messaging, you know, and you said, I don't need a headshot. Everybody needs a good headshot. Everybody needs a profile picture.
No, I agree. I was going to say, I don't want this for LinkedIn.
No.
Like, my hair is already big and long. I'm not trying to get a job. I would probably never get hired. I look like
if we did a really cool portrait headshot, you know, kind of moody thing for you and you put it on your LinkedIn, you know, you might get picked up in syndication, you know, who knows?
Yeah, but I don't even have LinkedIn. Well, you know what I'm thinking, and what I'm going to have you probably do is that, you know, we are building a house, and when we get our new house, I want to have a headshot done of all of the whole family.
Oh, yeah.
All in black t-shirts.
That'd be awesome.
And we're going to put them all on the wall.
Perfect.
But in a group, in a way that it's like, just our headshots.
Yeah, like a montage of real clean, dramatic headshots. That'd be great. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Not for LinkedIn.
No.
Because I don't need a job. I want to retire.
What are you going to do? I mean, isn't this fun, though? This is good.
You know, the problem is that I'm living such a great life, but it requires, you know, to show up.
Yeah.
Right. And as soon as you have to show up, then it becomes like a job.
Right.
And so I don't want to retire because I think if I retired, I would pick up and continue the life that I'm living because I feel like I'm living the life of a retired guy anyway.
Semi-retired.
Yeah. But, I don't know. There's a change going on, John. I can smell it.
Yeah.
I can feel it in the air.
Yeah.
And we were at a party last night, talked to a good friend of mine. He was working for a big company, local company, and he quit. It's like, treat me like shit. You don't pay me any money. I quit. He's doing something completely different, but that he loves.
Yeah.
And he says that is way more important to me than sitting in some freaking cubicle doing what I was doing for whatever they were paying me.
Yeah.
Even if they had paid me more, I wouldn't want to do it. I think there's this awakening.
Yeah.
You know, we're waking the woke.
Yeah.
But I think the big awakening right now is that people are like, listen, what is we are doing here?
Yeah.
And
and people are asking those questions of themselves and of others, which I think is healthy.
Well, and can you imagine like being paid $7 an hour? Can you imagine for 1 hour I can take your time for $7? Yeah. You're like the best computer, the smartest guy, great photographer, and for $7, that's what you're worth. Yeah. And it's absurd. And then you think about it and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I teach my kids something about this too. My one son, we started a trash can retrieval service in our neighborhood where, you know, the trash gets out Monday or whatever, and then, you know, a lot of people come down and they come to their house for the weekend, and then they're off, and so but the trash needs to go out, but they need to, the cans need to go back into the garage. So we started a little mini business for $5. My son will ride his bike over and give him the code to the garage, and he'll put the trash cans, you know, back in. So he, and it takes him, I mean, you know, 5 minutes, you know, to do the whole thing. But he's making, you know, what is it, $60 an hour?
Well, but do you think, and I like that, and I appreciate that, but do you think there's also, like, a job where they just go do it and to make nothing? Do we learn something that way? And I'm not, that's not saying, listen, I get it. Entrepreneurs make, you know, little businessmen take it, make some money. But there's also something else that we're missing. And I feel that that's kind of this thing, like it's all about money. It's all about the more money you have, the better of a person you are. And
yeah, I agree with that. That whole mindset, I think, is like we started talking about, is starting to change, at least in some people's minds, which is healthy. Because again, like chasing that dollar, it's a tough game, because it's like the ego, like by definition, it's never enough. There's always somebody with more. There's always something else to do and to sort of fulfill this unfulfilling need.
Well, money is a leverage, right? I mean, it is a...
It's a tool, like anything else to me.
It's a tool. I mean, it's like a lever. And, you know, I watched Joe Rogan's podcast. He had Jewel on. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, God. She was fantastic. And she talked about how... and the stories that she tells are like, oh, my God, so unbelievable. But they're actually true. You know, and the fact is that early on in her music career that she was offered $1 million as a signing bonus or... Just a, what do they call it? Where they front the money to you, forward, it's $1 million forward towards the record. And now it was her job to sell $1 million of the record to pay it back. And
like an advance.
It's an advance. Yeah. Thank you. And she refused it. She didn't take it.
Yeah.
She said, I would rather get paid on the back end.
It creates a whole different pressure and you know, as an artist, particularly, you know, when you're forced to create.
Well, that's what she said. She goes, as soon as I'd have taken that, I'd have been leveraged. And that would have affected my creativity.
Absolutely.
The way that, you know, how I approach the music. And so, and then, of course, you know, she ended up selling, at one point, she was selling $1 million. No, she was selling 1 million albums every month.
Wow.
In the end. I mean, she...
Yeah, she because the work didn't suffer. She showed up and did what she's... you know, can do in her way, and what she's, the value is her. It's not the $1 million. It's not that front. It's what she can do.
Yeah. So there's something about that. And then there's also, you know, I remember my son did soccer 1 year. We were just talking about this last night, and we went there. My kids were little. They're still little, but they were smaller, and went down there, and there was no coach. Mm-hmm. So I go, well, I guess I'll volunteer to be the soccer coach. Since sure. nobody's here,
yeah,
I'll volunteer.
Yeah, jump in there.
Volunteer, right?
Yeah, right.
Like I'm volunteering here.
Yeah.
But we did it we were doing a couple games, and one day I was working on this app, and I took a phone call, and this, after the game, this lady comes up, she goes, if you don't care about this team enough to take a phone call, get off the field. Oh, and I was like, uh-oh. And I go, but I volunteered, you know? Like, I'm not even... You know, so it's also figuring out how to take it serious due to the fact that I'm not getting paid, right? Yeah. So I learned, unfortunately, humiliation, ego devastation. I got wrecked that day.
Somebody's always the figurehead. Somebody has to.
Yeah, and her son was the worst freaking soccer player, too. I think that was her anger problem. But so it's...
So it's just, she was just projecting.
Really, yeah. In the so end. It's trying to figure out how to... You know, do stuff for free, but at the same time, do stuff for money. I don't know. Maybe 1 month or 1 week, they go and pick them up, and they just say, "Hey, this one's on us. I don't know, but it's balancing it.
And it's sort of a tough lesson, you know, because everybody wants to, you know, get it done and be successful and have those accolades of money and of fame or whatever it is that sort of drives, you know, sort of acceptance, you know, on a larger scale. And, you know, having and putting the time in for, you know, practice and being, you know, humble about where you are but being, you know, professional and proud of what you do and creating real value for a client or a customer or a team or whatever you're doing, that just takes time.
It takes time.
And you know, and until you really put the time in to sort of synthesize that, I mean, you're kind of kidding yourself. I mean, you know, you want to charge, you know, $2,500 for an image, like you can. People do that. I know people that do that, but at the same time, like, they've been doing it for many, many years. There's nothing you can't ask them about photography and lighting and direction and all of those things and experience that you don't get by just like reading a book or attending a seminar. You have to do this stuff.
Do you think you learn or figure things out when you do services for free?
Yeah, I mean, I think you always do.
Especially if you're at the top, and then to do something for free or something like that, do you think that, because if you're like a Leibowitz, right, she's big time, right? She's,
oh, for sure, yeah.
And I'm sure she gives back. I'm sure she has a lot of stuff. I wouldn't even want to act like I knew, but, you know, for her to come out of her world and be like, yeah, let me just do headshots for free, I bet that would feel...
Yeah, and Free is sort of a, I don't know. I don't know if you ever really do anything for free. You're always getting something back. You're learning from the experience. You're getting something back, whether it's monetary or not. So
yeah, and I kind of think that's what my point was, is that, you know, trying to be able to identify that just because it doesn't come with fame or popularity or a money value doesn't mean that you're not really getting something that's almost more valuable.
Yeah, I mean, in the right space, I think sure. I think it works. I'm not a fan. I think photographers as a whole undervalue what they do in their work. I think, you know, there's a lot of sort of bottom of the barrel like pricing for people because everybody sort of the public thinks, well, they have a camera and it's easy and they were only there we were only there for 30 minutes and it's costing me $100 or whatever. But you're not paying for the 30 minutes. You're paying for the months and years of training and the practice that went into it being just 30 minutes and you getting great images.
Well, and there's a lot of, you know, it's like when people come to the salon, they're like $50 for a haircut. Right. You go, well, there's parking. There's electricity.
Yeah, you couldn't be any closer.
Right. I'm on time. You're not waiting. It's a good haircut.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're happy. I mean, where's all that value?
Yeah, same thing. Totally the same thing. Yeah.
Silly. People. <It's funny.
laughs> Love it.
So what is how are we going to do this headshot? What's a day like for something like this? So let's say, John, I want to get some portrait shots. What's a day like for that?
Yeah, so what we would do is we'd probably jump on a phone call real quick to go over the process. And what I would tell you is if we got on the call is, hey, here's what it cost. Here's some times that we can do this. And then here are some things that I want you to do, which is, you know, bring some clothing options, bring different looks, that sort of thing. Drink a bunch of water the night before. It helps with your skin.
Hydrate.
Exactly.
Don't drink a lot of vodka the night before.
Don't go out drinking because your face will turn red the next day and you'll be all puffy. So that's definitely on the list as well. And then just, you know, get a good night's sleep and get some rest. And then the rest of it, we'll take care of when we get there. And you know, most people don't like their picture being taken of them because it's uncomfortable and people, you know, don't always know how to stand or how they look. And then, you know, eventually somebody luckily gets a good picture and they're like, I like that. But as a professional, like I can tell you, I know what looks probably better than what you can just guess.
Right.
So I can direct you into the spaces and look at your face. And everybody has usually one side that's better than the other. So we can, you know, again, magnify the good things about your face and minimize the things that you're maybe uncomfortable with.
It's funny when you look at, like, I do a lot of, you know, I shampoo a lot of people, and so they sit down in the shampoo bowl, and I stand behind them, and I shampoo their hair, so I'm constantly looking at people upside down.
Yeah.
It's crazy how crooked our faces are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah, everybody's usually has an eye difference. And
well, there are a lot of people, their chin doesn't line up. It kind of curves around like a banana. The nose isn't centered. It's a mess.
Yeah, so so what we'll do is, like, so let's look at, so turn your nose this way.
Hand me that box of, yeah. Slide. Thank you.
So look at your face. So, like, turn look your head this, yeah, so that, stand nice and tall. So look at this.
Okay.
And we'll talk about the eyes in a minute. So turn your head that way. Just always eyes to me, though. It's eyes to me. And then slowly come back. Okay. This way. So that's a good angle for you. Keep okay. going. Keep going. Keep going all the way through. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. And everybody looks a little different. Yeah. So
that's your hair. When I have something important to say, I turn a little to the right.
Right. And that's where your hair's parted. Did you know this? So usually everyone's best side, generally speaking, is the same side that their hair is parted on.
Okay.
So you
so
can
my
start
hair part's here?
Yeah. So you're kind of in the middle, but you're more on the left side. So when you turn your head like this, you're opening up this side of your face.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Curtains.
Yeah. So okay. just so it comes in and you and
but you said I look better when I turn this way.
I think you look interesting that way. Yeah, I mean, but some people we call ambifacial, so they're good on both sides.
Amphibious.
Yeah. So you're, like I said, you're a good-looking guy.
Ambidextrous.
You're pretty symmetrical. Your eyes are pretty much the same size. So.
Ambifacious.
Yeah, ambifacial. That's right.
Nice. Damn it, that's just one more thing I got to keep up now.
We make up these things as we go.
Oh, yeah, what I've seen here, ma'am, is ambifacial, and that's excellent. Yeah. Very high quality
we
face.
We can bring you right in here. It'll be fine.
We've got you toned right now. So you set up clothes.
Yeah, we talk through these things, and we get people in there. And you know, the, sort of the art to this, too, is, you know, you can't see what I see. But you know what you look like, obviously, when you get up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you see things. And you know your perceived flaws, and everybody has them. And, you know, everybody knows what that feels like personally. But when you're someone's taking your picture, you can't see your face. So right. you have to rely on your photographer to tell you, what looks good, what doesn't look good. So we work on, you know, body positioning, facial positioning. We talk about, you know, connection with the eyes, the mouth, you know, things that are important to a photograph that's going to help draw people in. You know, you think of, you know, people's eyes. I see so many headshots and people's eyes are, you know, wide open. And you know, you think of the term deer in the headlights. You know, that's fear. You're showing fear.
Yeah.
And we don't want fear. We want confidence. So we bring the eyes down a little bit.
I looked at some of the portraits that you've done. I don't I think they're on your Instagram, which is Yeat.
Yeah, _ Y-E-A-T, Yeat, yeah.
Yeah, _ Y-E-A-T, Yeat.
Yeah, Yeat. Yeah, like Yeatman.
Yeatman.
Yeah.
So Y underscore.
No, _ Y-E-A-T, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
But no, yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah,
so, yeah. _YET, yeah.
I'm reinforcing myself.
Well, I've looked at them, and they're great.
Thank you. Thank you.
I actually was wondering, do you do any of that on film? I don't know if you could. Could you do a shot on film and get the picture onto Instagram? Or would you have to take a picture of the picture?
You'd have to do that, yeah. You'd have to digitally transfer it on there.
Yeah, that would be. Can you, if, could someone ask to have their pictures done in film?
Sure. We can. Yeah, we can do that.
I think, was it you that did some film, latest, you were doing some film stuff, weren't you, recently?
I haven't done any film in a while, but I started out on film. I shot a lot of film. You
maybe
know,
it's processing. Tiffany. Tiffany did some great stuff on film.
Yeah, I think she's done some stuff.
Yeah, I love, I saw, she did some pictures of, I forget the guy's name, but just great shots. Soft.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, that whole thing about film is that, you know, the economy of shooting, I call it, is just... You know, you only get 24 or 36 shots before you have to really have a hard stop and change a roll of film. Right. And so to take that image, that one image, you know, clearly and be in focus in the right one, you know, it takes some real thought. It's interesting. Richard Avedon, you know, the famous photographer, fashion photographer in from New York, and he shot obviously in film during that time period. And he would do these major... photo shoots for brands like Vogue covers and all of these things. And he'd have the lights set up He'd have the model come in. He'd direct them into the place he wanted because he knows what it looked, what he wanted to see. He had already thought it through and what he wanted to look like. Got him in the place. And he would, a lot of times, just take one shot deal and like, okay, that's it. That's, we're done. Like, and we're out. And that's what film is. You know, in the digital world, you can take a bunch of photos and you can kind of go through, which does create some flexibility too. But
it's kind of a pain in the ass though. I mean, I look back at old shots, you know, on picture, you know, on paper, and you look back and oh, that was fun. It wasn't, you're not like, oh, that's a perfect picture. It's,
yeah,
you captured something. And now it's become the perfect picture. You know, we have to have the perfect picture.
Yeah.
And we lose that.
Yeah, the spontaneity of the moment.
Spontaneity.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's what we create behind this now, too, is you can still see a lot of people that do like a smile or whatever, but it's not a genuine smile. There's no emotion. There's no, you know, I call it juice. There's no juice behind it. So we create those moments behind there, and I say funny stuff and get people to react, and you know, and it, the emotion comes through in the picture, and that's what we end up capturing. To your point,
that may be fun. That might be a cool project, is to go into a business. I think hair salon, but maybe hair salon,
yeah.
And just kind of hang out and capture some behind the scenes, you know, folding towels, laughing, the, you know, the hustle behind the scenes as to the hustle in front of the scenes. And that might be something cool to hang on walls in a business where you're just kind of capturing some fun moments, some candid moments.
Yeah, there's always a lot of stories wherever you are, whether you're in an office or a salon or a restaurant. There's all these, you know, little dramas that play out, you know, in between the larger story of a work day.
Tiffany is in Mexico shooting Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, really?
That big dead festival,
yeah,
you know, that they have in Mexico.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I'm so nervous. I don't know. I go, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, just.
I mean, you could just
step into the fear and go see.
Yeah,
what you,
I mean,
see.
There's got to be, holy shit, look at I can imagine it's just tons of. That's kind of the tough thing about, like, the iPhone or digital or, you know, this lack of really a stop, you know, 24 or however, 36, however many pictures you used to get.
Yeah.
I mean, I know in my phone, I look at them like, oh, it's so much. I actually have to make an effort to go through and take out some stuff. If I go out and take some pictures, there's probably maybe 12 pictures, 15 that I took, probably 3 that I want to keep,
yeah,
4 that I want to keep.
That's
I need to go in and really clean that out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, then you start, they become part of your portfolio of stuff.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, that's, you can take a lot of photos, and when we do headshots, we take a lot of photos. And I tether the shots into my computer, into my laptop, so we can see where we are and what we're doing on the screen as we go.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it as a coaching tool. Like, okay, what do you like about this image? See how your face is turned here? We need to make sure you stand up, or, you know, those things that, you know, all right, get back in there, and then we'll do some more, and then we'll get to the place that we, you know, the images that we really love, rather than just shooting a bunch of stuff and, you know, setting up a gallery. Like, everything's decided right then and there. So it makes the process very simple and clean, and people get what they want.
Yeah. Well, whenever you want to do it, I'm ready. Did you want to do it today?
Yeah, I brought the stuff.
Yeah, we'll do it today, and, yeah, and we'll post a picture on somewhere, and we'll see.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
But can I do it in a black t-shirt?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's very thinning.
Yeah, you look great.
I don't want to go do any exercise before my shot. I just want to have a thinning black
t-shirt
on.
Yeah, we're doing from the chest up, so you're in great shape.
That's one of the fun things that I've decided to do in my life, is just get rid of all my t-shirts.
Yeah.
And just wear black.
Yeah, I've made the Old Navy run too, and just gotten like 10 black ones, 10
white
ones.
Don't forget Old Navy. You need to go. There's a t-shirt company on Instagram. They're called True Classic.
Uh-huh.
And they make a excellent t-shirt.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I know there's several companies that make great t-shirts. I'm not saying this is the only one. This is the one that I've been digging, and it's called True Classic, and I bought a bunch of shirts and they sent them to me and I started wearing them. This is one, and they're fit. They're cut like your body, right?
Yeah.
So
it's a good look.
Yeah, and so I love them. Now they're special. So I'm only wearing them when I special occasions, like working and
right.
But like if I go do something else and just throw on an old like lucky t-shirt,
yeah,
it feels terrible.
Yeah.
It's a shitty ass shirt.
Fit is important.
fit is important.
I worked in the apparel industry for almost 20 years, and so it's everything. I mean, if your clothes fit, I mean, you look better, you feel better,
you do,
and it just looks better.
Well, I wore a T-shirt the other day that wasn't one of my True Classics, and it's just an old T-shirt. I'm like, oh my God, I got to get to the gym.
Well, styles change too, but fit's important for sure.
These are terrible shirts. And, you know, I'll keep a shirt for the logo.
Yeah.
And not how it fits.
Yeah.
But I got rid of a whole bunch. I'm actually going to black, gray, and army green T-shirts are all I will be owning.
That's all you need. That's all you need. That's awesome.
Well, listen, buddy. One more time, your Instagram.
Yeah, so it's underscore Y-E-A-T. So my name, last name is Yeatman, so it's an old nickname that I had growing up, and my closest friends still call me Yeat.
No, I like it. And do you have Facebook?
Facebook is it's Yeatman Photography or Trident Image Group, which is the company, which is more the business side of things.
If someone thinks that this picture you take and the other ones that you take are awesome, and they say we must have this portrait done, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can visit the website. It's tridentimagegroup.com.
I did go back and link that.
Oh, cool.
In the other podcast, and we'll put it in this one.
Great. Yeah, that's the easiest thing. You can reach me there. That's probably the easiest thing. Or just send me a DM through Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Well, John Yeatman Jr.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you very
much. I always appreciate you coming on. And once again, I feel like I could talk for another hour.
Love it.
So I'll have to have you back.
Cheers.
But thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye.
Bye.